Welcome to Hometown to Hollywood. My guest today is Ryan McCartan. Ryan's best known for his off-Broadway role of J.D. in Heathers the Musical, and the role of Diggy on Livin' Maddie, as well as roles on Royal Pains, The Standoff, Summer Forever, Monsterville Cabinet of Souls, and he's going to star as Brad in Rocky Horror on Fox this October. He's also one half of the duo The Girl and the Dreamcatcher, whose recent EP hit iTunes in the number 2 position on the pop album charts in its first 24 hours. Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So let's get right to it. When did you know you wanted to be an actor?
I don't know. I don't think that there was ever really a specific moment. I kind of fell into it on accident. My story's sort of interesting. So I, you know, when you're younger, your parents just kind of throw everything at you and hope something sticks because they don't want you to be bored and they don't want you to just play video games in your room all day, which I was okay with, but they didn't want me to do.
So terrible parents.
What the heck? So they, you know, they started me in sports, and I think that I sort of enjoyed them, but again, very young, like 6. We're talking like 6 here. And, but like every, like I swam, tennis, soccer, like the only thing that I didn't do was football because I told my mom that I didn't want people to touch me. So that was the only thing that I didn't do. Right before I turned 7, I was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes. And a lot of kids can make that work for whatever reason. Just the physical strain of my body with all of the sports and being so newly diagnosed and so young, it wasn't working for me. I didn't like how I felt, and I was very adamant on quitting everything. And so then my parents were like, "Okay, well, now he's just going to sit in his room and play video games all day, and let's be like make him do something." And so they were trying to, you know, they got me in like science camp and arts and crafts and all these things. And my sister, who has always been an actress, like from the age of 3, like has never wavered, not even once, was taking voice lessons at the time from one of the sort of big voice teachers in Minneapolis, where we're from. And, you know, we didn't have a nanny or anything. So this particular voice lesson, my mom had to bring me with because there was nowhere else to put me. And at the end of the voice lesson, the voice teacher approached my mom and said, "Does your son sing?" My mom was like, "I mean, like, kind of, like, we've heard him sing, like, sometimes he makes fun of his sister while she's singing, like, and, like, but we know that he can carry a tune. Why?" He was like, "Oh, I'm just curious. Do you mind if I just, like, totally free of charge, let me just, you know, do some scales with him, whatever." So I sang with him for 10 minutes. And what we didn't know is that he was in cahoots with the artistic director at the Great American History Theater in St. Paul, and they were looking for a young boy for their fall musical. And so John, the voice teacher, submitted me and said that he sort of like vetted my voice at this voice lesson that we had. I'm using air quotes for those of you who are listening. And also told the artistic director that I was this like highly proficient, experienced actor at the age of 8. And so lo and behold, I get an audition. I go in. I do a good job. I mean, probably just from the grace of almost not knowing what you're doing, you know, just sort of that like in the moment kind of thing. And they kept being like, "Oh, we're just so excited to meet you, like all this experience, whatever." And my mom and I were just sort of looking at each other like, "What are you talking about? Like, here we're thinking like life experience, like what?" And they gave me the part, and then it all sort of came out later that John like lied to them, but like I was what they were looking for, so it all worked out. I don't know.
Oh, man.
But so I fell into it on accident, and there was never like a moment of like, "Oh, I'm an actor now." I just, that's when I started acting and I never stopped. And, you know, when I became a little bit more conscious about what I was doing in high school and what have you, I the competition became very real to me, and I sort of wavered for a second. And then I had a series of experiences that really sort of brought me back to the arts. And I think that like in my, you know, I'm still so young, but like in my quote unquote adult life, like that was sort of the moment of like, "Oh no, like I am an actor and like this is what I'm going to do with my life, like no matter what." But, you know, all of that was sort of substantiated by this sort of accidental history that I had as a child. So, you know, it's a really long answer of basically saying I don't know.
But it's a cool answer, and I always love asking people this because the stories are so interesting.
Yeah.
And always different. And I love that because, you know, I think a lot of the times people think, well, there's like a certain way to do this. And
right.
You're either doing it right or you're not. It's like, no, there's like every different way to do this.
Right.
And you start when you start. Did you have somebody who inspired you?
My sister did. You know, I remember, you know, we would go to her plays and we would watch what she was doing, and I would always just be so floored by her talent, but also by her passion and her investment. That hasn't changed. It's only exponentially increased as we've gotten older. Just as she's, you know, she trained at the Boston Conservatory and is not only very talented, but is also artistically like a genius. And she's been an inspiration for me this whole time, you know, for just so many reasons. You know, it isn't just her proficiency as an actress, but also, you know, just her dedication to fitness and taking care of herself, her dedication to education, the amazing friends that she surrounds herself with, the life that she's created. Like it's never been enough for her to just be an actor. Like, she has incorporated artistry into every tier of her life. And I think that is the mark of someone who's going to be successful in this industry. And that's something that I've always tried to emulate.
I love that. And I from everything I know about Allison, I have to agree with you.
Yeah.
So, how important has training been for you?
Really important. And you know, I think it's also important to echo sort of your sentiment of the fact that, you know, you hear so many different stories and you hear so many different versions of how this thing goes. You know, what I call training might not be training to the next guy. You know, I tried the college thing. I ended up dropping out just because I really didn't like it. You know, I tried the going to acting class thing and I ended up stopped going because I just really didn't like it. Like, sort of the conventional means of what people would call training just never really worked for me. That being said, though, you know, my sister spent a lot of money on a big college. She went to the Boston Conservatory, and I know for a fact that she would say that changed her life. And so she took a much more conventional approach, and it really, really worked for her. I didn't take a conventional approach, and that actually really, really worked for me. And I find that my training happens, and not even from actually working, like being on set and being on stage. That's great training, of course. But you know, even for the jobs that I didn't book, like there's so much training that I feel happens just in preparing for an audition, in going into the room. Working with a director or working with a casting director, running lines with your friends, you know, reading books, you know, studying different methods, you know, Stanislavski, you know, Twyla Tharp even has a book about living artistically in your life. Like, I think that the really unique thing about artists is that you can train kind of 24/7 no matter what you're doing, if that's the mindset that you live in. And that's sort of been my approach. And like I said, maybe unconventional, but it really works for me.
I love that. And I also love that you brought up how much you can learn simply through auditioning. I came to really feel that a large part of, you know, where Dove kind of got over this hump in terms of like getting from where she started to where she needed to be as an actor, was through all the auditions,
mm-hmm.
all that, like, man, you try on a lot of different possible roles,
mm-hmm.
and you do your best to get inside them fast and hard to successfully audition for something that can really be its own school in some ways.
For sure. Well, and I mean, and also just the very basic idea of, you know, getting used to walking into a room and knowing that the odds are so immensely stacked not in your favor, like, there's a huge mental component to... I mean, listen, casting directors see 50 people a day. They smell desperation. They can clue into fear in a minute. And, you know, you walk in there, and if you're that guy that just, like, really desperately needs this, and, like, I just really want this job, like, they see that no matter what you do, no matter how cool you think you're playing it. And so, you know, there's a lot of training involved in just sort of that hard waiting game of, like, okay, like, my manager is very meticulous, very good with numbers, and she sort of kept the books of all of the auditions that I did and everything. And when I booked my first part, she called me and she said, that was your... I think 157th audition.
Oh, I love that.
So I went out, I got no 156 times before I got yes. And those 156 no's were far more crucial to my training than that one yes was, because it made me learn very, 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 very quickly that I couldn't be desperate, and that I had to walk into the room knowing that this probably wasn't going to go my way. And that actually makes you more comfortable, not less comfortable, and more confident, not less confident, because the stakes become lower. And it actually becomes more about that training, about, like, okay, if I walk into this audition and I nail it, even if I don't get it because they're looking for a blonde guy, I still get to walk out of there feeling like I nailed it. And I still get to feel like I really poured myself into this material and really, immersed myself in this role and sort of learned the lessons as an actor that I had to learn in that regard. And that's the building blocks of what we do. That's actually more important than booking the role is.
I agree. And that's basically its own win, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely.
People,
absolutely.
You know, need to get that, I think, because it's so easy to walk into that room, and when you practically inevitably don't get the role, because, as you say, the odds are just, you know, the odds are pretty, pretty stacked. When you don't, then they're like, oh, I'm not talented enough, I'm not
right.
good enough. It's like, no.
Right. Well, and that, I mean, that's one of the hugest lessons that I try to impart on people who, you know, say, like, what's some advice that you have, or what, you know, what's, like, the secret of, it's like, you need to not take that personally, and you need to understand what's actually going on here. I had a mentor in Minneapolis who told me, your goal is not to book the project, your goal is to get a callback. Because if you get a callback, that means that they like what you did. If you book the project, that means not only that they liked what you did, but that a bunch of people in suits at the top have approved your tape, and you look exactly like what they're looking for. I mean, you cannot book a role because the writer will watch your tape and be like, he reminds me of my cousin who I have a bad relationship with. I don't really want him. Like, you cannot book a role for any stupid reason that has nothing to do with how mind-blowingly talented you are. Like, and you need to understand that, because if you take it personally every time, then you're going to hear no about 50 times and you're going to go home. And you can't do that.
You need to make it to 157.
Or 500. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
It's you need to want it bad enough to you know, understand that number might be way higher and that might be okay.
You know, it's so cool that your manager Nancy actually tracked that stuff. I wish I'd been Nancy for
yeah.
Dove, because, like, by the time she finally did book her first thing, I can really conservatively estimate that she must have had for sure 100 auditions.
Yeah.
But I wish I had the number, because
yeah.
it would be great to know.
Yeah.
But, like, 100, easy.
Yeah.
And
it's
that's
a lot. It's a lot. Well, that's the other thing. It's like, I became so disheartened because casting directors would be like, I love you, you're great. And then they wouldn't give me the role. And I'd be like, well, what the heck? You just told me you loved me. But of course, I wasn't factoring in the reality of the business, which is that the casting director can like you all they want, but they aren't the one pulling the trigger on you. They're the one bringing you into the room for the producers and the directors and the creators, and they end up pulling the trigger. But if you know what you're doing, and if you understand the nature of the situation, you can know that if you're in a casting director's pocket, they're going to continue to bring you in. And then maybe after you've auditioned for that casting director one or two dozen times, the role is going to fit, the producers are going to like it, and it's all going to work out. And you know, acting, it's so silly, just sort of the society that we live in that just so glorifies, like, this kind of Justin Bieber instant fame thing. Like, acting is not a sprint. It is a marathon. Like, we are playing the long game, and it's so easy to forget that, especially because rejection makes everything seem so much more imminent, you know?
I love that. Well, so let's talk about auditioning for a second. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about auditioning, but do you have any specific, like, tips for people going into auditions? I get this question a lot.
Yeah, I mean, mine are going to be so basic and so generic, but the reason that you always hear these are because it's real. It's like, yeah, I mean, you need to be confident, you know, and confidence stems from that sort of knowledge of knowing what you're getting yourself into. You just simply cannot walk into the audition being like, this is the one. You know, I always talk about focusing on the what and not the how. So if the what is, I am going to be a movie star, that's fantastic. You run with that until the cows come home. I'm going to be a movie star. Great. But I'm going to be a movie star does not mean I'm going to be a movie star on this project at this time. I'm going to book it by the fall. Because if you start playing with the hows of it all, what you're suggesting is that you know better than whatever the plan is that the universe or whatever god or goddess that you believe in or subscribe to has assigned to you. And that's sort of silly. So, you know, when you walk into an audition, it can't be, I'm going to book this part, because that's not really up to you. It's, I'm going to do an amazing job. And if it's just about nailing the audition and the parts will come as they come, then yeah, the pressure goes down, the confidence goes up. Another big thing that I always say is that waiting room is where the real audition is, because anyone can be talented, anyone can walk into that audition room and be proficient in the craft if they've trained enough and deliver a good audition. But I think a lot of people get in that waiting room and they look around and they see all of these people who look just enough like them. Oh, but he's taller than me. Oh, he's more attractive than me. Oh, he's blonde. Oh, he has gorgeous blue eyes and mine are brown. What's like, oh no. And you sit there and you psych yourself out about, oh, I'm not what they want. Oh, I'm not what they want. Oh, I'm not what they want. And then that's going to manifest in your performance. And if you walk in there thinking that you're not what they want because you've decided that these random strangers in the audition waiting room are what they want, then again, these casting directors, they're like sharks. They just smell it in the water. So you walk in and they know in a second, oh, he's not confident. I don't want to put my faith behind him, or I don't want to put my, you know, my credibility as a casting director on this person who isn't even confident enough to sit in the waiting room for an hour.
That is so true. And that is, in fact, a lot of how this whole industry works. It's like, because it's all relationship oriented. And, right. And you know, you represent your agent as much as your agent represents you. And you represent the casting director who recommends you for mm-hmm. a role. And it really does all work that way. Speaking of agents and managers, how did you end up with an agent and a manager? How'd that happen for you?
Another sort of unconventional story. So after my stint at the Great American History Theater that I just told you about, and after I had done a few more plays, and obviously, like I said, my sister had been acting forever, both me and my sister were really sort of jonesing to take that next step. My sister was involved with an organization called Karen International, which is, you know, one of those organizations where you sort of pay as you go, and they, you know, they tell you that they're going to get you all of these connections as you, you know, kind of pay out the nose to be a part of this thing. And it's like, it's not a scam because it did great things for my sister, but like, it was definitely very expensive and also, you know, maybe a little unorthodox as far as how to get connections, but that's what she was doing. And
so it, that sounds like a commercial showcase.
Sort of. Yeah.
Some training ish.
Yeah, no. There were classes and everything. It's really, the only reason that you hear this hesitancy in my voice is because I don't want to sit here and sound like I'm advocating for these sort of organizations, because a lot of them are very credible, but unfortunately a lot more of them are just kind of set out to screw you and take your money. And that's not fair. I really, because of the story that I'm about to tell, I believe that this one really is ethical. You know, even though they were very expensive, I do believe that they were ethical. But the hesitation in my voice is just coming from the fact that I don't want listeners to think that that's the way in, because a lot of the times those are scams. So you just have to do your research. And we really did with my sister. So my sister was a part of one of those organizations. They had a showcase in New York. She went to New York. She nailed it, of course, because she's immensely talented. And she ended up securing an agent and a manager who said, "We would love to manage you if you were in LA."
Ah.
So while that was happening, I was auditioning, because I had expressed a little bit of interest in film and television. I was auditioning for sort of the one big casting director in Minneapolis, and her name is Lynn Blumenthal. And Lynn had a connection to a woman named Nancy Kramer here in Los Angeles, who is now my manager, and a woman named Iris Burton, who has since passed, but was a fantastic, very powerful youth agent in Hollywood, who was, you know, responsible for the Phoenix Brothers and Amy Adams and Josh Hartnett and people like that. All Minnesotans, interestingly enough.
It's the Minnesota Mafia.
Yeah, that's how we do it. So Lynn really, we became quite fond of each other, and she really believed in me. And so she sort of sent her feelers out to Iris and Nancy and said, you know, "Any chance you need a 9-year-old boy?" And they were like, "Yeah, if he wants to move to Los Angeles, we'll represent him." So here, me and my sister were both young kids in the position of having people saying, "If you come to Los Angeles, we'll work with you." So my unbelievable parents, who had 2 or 3 years prior built from the ground up their like dream house with a pool in the back, without a moment's hesitation, sold that house to have enough money to move my dad into a townhouse and keep working, and move my mom, me, and my sister out to the Oakwoods to stay in Los Angeles temporarily and try this out, which is just a really quick side note. You can't get anywhere alone. If you don't have a support system who's willing to do anything for your career, it's not going to happen for you. And I so strongly believe that. I owe everything to my amazing parents and what they did. And I know that Dove would say the same thing about you. I know that all of my friends who have come far in this industry would say the same thing about their parents. It is just, that is the bread and butter of all of this. So they made an amazing sacrifice, and they allowed me and my sister to really follow a dream that was sort of intangible, it seemed. And so that's where I made this connection with Nancy Kramer, who is now my manager.
When you were 9?
When I was 9 years old.
That's so cute.
So we were out there for like 6 months for pilot season, sort of like January to June-ish. And I think that's 5 months. And you know, we both came close-ish on stuff, but not really. And then it was also sort of like, we like need to go home and be normal kids again. So ended up going back, and it was a great experience, and I always remembered it, but like, it's not like we like made it out there, you know?
Well, it usually takes more than 6 months
of course
to make it.
Oh, yeah, duh. But it was a really positive experience that I never forgot. So cut to, I'm 18 years old. Like I said, I went to college for a brief time, and just, it wasn't for me. It had nothing. The program that I went to was excellent. I highly, fully believe in it. It wasn't for me. I don't know why, it just wasn't. And so I was sort of spinning my wheels, being like, what am I going to do with my life? Like, am I going to reapply to a different college? Probably not, because I hated it. Like, what am I going to do? And as luck would have it, Lynn Blumenthal, from the previous story, was like, "Hey, I have this Disney Channel audition if you're interested." And I was like, "Yeah, of course, whatever." And so I go to this little place in Minneapolis, and we film it and we send it off, and they really liked it. And Disney wanted to fly me out to Los Angeles to do it. And so I was like, "Oh my God, this is crazy." And Lynn was like, "Let me call Nancy and see if she would be interested in sort of helping you out for this one, just for this one." And I was like, sure, because again, Nancy hadn't managed me since I was 9, now I was 18, looked a little different, sounded a little different, you know, that whole puberty thing. So Nancy, this sort of came out of the blue, so I think she was a little reserved, and she was just sort of like, "I mean, yeah, whatever, like, I'll, just for this one thing, of course." So I fly to Los Angeles, and I get off the plane, and Nancy picked me up, And I get in her car and I sit down and she says, "Welcome to Los Angeles. Have you ever been here before?"
Oh my God.
And I was like, yeah, you've been representing me for like 9 years. Like, remember me? And she was like, oh my God. So she takes me to her office later and she's like, "This is the picture that I have of you." And it's my 9-year-old headshot. She's like, I don't know who you are. Like, this is all I have of you.
That is crazy.
That was just a funny story. But so anyway, so I auditioned for this Disney Channel show. I was totally wrong for the part. I didn't book it. But again, same sort of thing. The experience overall was just so positive. And Nancy and I got along so well and really enjoyed each other's company. And that's a big thing. Like, that sort of chemistry is really important for representation. You have to get along, obviously. It can't just be like a business relationship. It's a little personal too. And so I was just sort of confiding in Nancy about the fact that I had no idea what I was about to do with my life. And she was like, "Well, if you want to move to Los Angeles, I'll represent you." And I was like, "If you mean that, I will be here in a month." And she was like, "I mean that." And I think I actually moved out more like 20 days later. I packed my entire life into my Toyota Corolla and drove across the country. Beautiful drive, by the way, if you ever want to drive from Minnesota to California, gorgeous. That's where it all started, and I struggled and struggled and struggled, and Nancy has been by my side the whole way, and just through Nancy and my pounding the pavement, we were able to, you know, secure a few test deals. I didn't book any of them, but through that, we were able to sort of say, okay, obviously he's, like, gaining momentum, and we sort of pitched me around to some agents, and that's where I found representation on the agent side, and that's sort of that.
Well, it really does work that way. If you can get one, if you can get a manager who believes in you, they can help you get the right agent. If you get an agent who believes in you, they can help you take a meeting with a potential manager. And, you know, just getting that first one is often a huge stumbling block for people. Yeah. But you,
well, and
you had an interesting way to do that. That's so cool.
I did. But, you know, it's a story that I think is worth telling because, you know, oh, you're from Minnesota, like whatever happens there in Minnesota, whatever. But it's like, no, like, you know, if you can utilize the resources in your minor market community to be able to sort of have a jumping off point when you land in the major markets like New York or LA or wherever you're going. Like, there's always a way in, and you know, like, being from Minnesota happens to be a huge advantage of mine because Nancy really likes to cultivate Minnesotan talent that she finds through Lynn. Like, you know, these things that you don't think are going to be an advantage can be a huge advantage, and you should utilize where you come from, and you should, because you just never know. It's like, I had no idea that Lynn had this connection with this great Hollywood manager, but she did. And that ended up being sort of the cornerstone that I built my life off of. Like, you know, there's always a way in. You just have to kind of find the creative way to do it.
Actually, it's really interesting because Dove's story is very, very similar. We had literally one connection in Hollywood that we didn't even really know was a connection. And it was somebody who had directed her and coached her back in Washington State. She was a director and was kind of a champion and a mentor for her. Well, she was the one who was able to make the only phone call we could ask for to get us a meeting with Pamela Fisher.
Unbelievable.
And then it just went from there. And it's like, okay, you know, Bainbridge Island, Washington, not a hotbed for Hollywood, but it's like there's always somebody somewhere mm-hmm. who knows someone who can help you just get your foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
And it goes back to what I said. You don't focus on the how of it. Focus on the what of it. Because if you focus on the how of it, you're gonna fall victim to the silly preconceived notions of Hollywood that you have from movies or from stories that you've heard that aren't true, and you're gonna think that you know the way to get yourself in, and you're gonna ignore the signs that are all around you. And you know, you might find a really unconventional inside-out approach right where you are in St. Louis or in, you know, Ohio or whatever, and that might be everything that you need, and you might ignore it because you, like, don't think that that's the right way. But as soon as you surrender yourself to the fact that there is no right way, you're going to find a lot more ways in.
That's just beautiful.
Yeah.
So what was your school experience like? You were acting a lot. Mm-hmm. Were you in and out of school? Did you homeschool? How did that work?
So when we went to LA, I homeschooled. When I was in eighth grade, I did a run at the Guthrie Theater, and then I actually did two shows that ran and rehearsed simultaneously at the Children's Theater Company. So I and the Children's Theater Company does really long runs. So that was like 180 shows between the two of them. So that was a really busy year. So I homeschooled for that year as well. For the rest of my schooling, I it was very conventional. I just went to the public school in my city, but I still did a lot of professional theater and, you know, commercials and this, that, and the other thing. And, that was hard, but, you know, my dad is a high school principal, and he comes from a line of educators in his family. You know, education is very important to me and my family. Like I said about my sister too. And so, you know, we always really stayed on top of our schoolwork. That was always a huge priority. But we also obviously wanted to do theater, and the school itself, you know, administratively was very supportive, but we had some teachers that made it really difficult for us, but we had to be, just very communicative and, extremely diligent and work very hard. You know, I would do my assignments during intermission. I would do my assignments in the car on the way there and on the car on the way home. I would, you know, wake up early and go to school and do the makeup things, or I did whatever I had to do to make sure that I was getting good marks, but still able to do the theater that I wanted to do. If you want it bad enough, you'll kind of do whatever it takes. And that's sort of what I did.
So speaking of high school, you won the prestigious Jimmy Award, which is the National High School Musical Theater Award for Best Actor. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is so amazing. So how did this happen, and how did that impact your life?
Well, your former question of how did this happen is something that I'm still asking myself. I don't really know. So the format of it all is that local theater communities all over the nation have sort of like, you know, the Tony Awards for their high school theater. And in Minneapolis, you know, ours is called the Spotlights. Here in Los Angeles, there's one called the Jerry Hermans, I think. And so you are recognized for the job that you did in your high school theater performance, and, you know, if you are selected, if they think that your performance was noteworthy, you get this award. And in our case, getting the award, the Spotlight, made you eligible to compete in something called the Triple Threat Competition. And if you win the Triple Threat Competition, you're sent to New York to compete in the Jimmys. And this is sort of the standard operating procedure for about 25 programs across the country. And, you know, I forget the statistic, but it's something like, when all is said and done, there are like 50,000 kids that are after this spot.
That's crazy.
And indeed, insane. And so I won the Spotlight. I competed in the Triple Threat performance. I called my mom during rehearsals about a billion times and said, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm not going to win. All of these guys are so much better than me. Like, what am I doing? Won somehow, was sent to New York. And just really, I just sort of took the opportunity of being in New York, of just like having a good time and exploring New York. Cause I was like, this is a joke. Like, I'm nobody from Minnesota. Like, there's no way I'm going to win. And of course, like, so many talented kids there, all of whom I was just in awe of. And I was just sort of like, okay, great. Like, no pressure. I'm not going to win. So I can just like really learn a lot from my peers and enjoy being in New York City and have the time of my life. And so that's sort of what I did. And so the format of the Jimmys is that you rehearse and you sort of put on this first act that you've rehearsed and prepared for. And then the second act is sort of a live competition, where right before the second act, they announce who the six finalists are, and you have no prior knowledge of this. And then you, you perform a song that you've prepared on your own time, and the judges, you know, adjudicate live and pick the winner based on those performances. Side note, this is also happening at the Minskoff Theater in New York, where they do Lion King.
No pressure.
So just to make it even more real, not only is this all happening at a Broadway house, but it's the Broadway house where they do Lion King, where the stage is, like, all robotronic. So, like, they're literally like, okay, so if you're selected as a finalist, you know, you're gonna come up and you're gonna stand on this X, and then you're going to be brought down on these giant elevators down into the pits of the stage where you're going to rehearse, and then before you perform, you're going to be brought back up on this elevator. And so I'm just like, what is happening? And so sure enough, they call my name, and I pee my pants. I mean, not really, basically, metaphorically peed my pants, figuratively. And I stand on this X, and I'm brought down on this crazy elevator, and we get down to the basement, and we're like, what is happening? And we all go to our corners, and we all, you know, sweat and freak out and practice and warm up. And then get lifted back up, and we each do our respective solo numbers, and they called my name, and it was insane. And it's still, to this day, a huge validation to me. Like I was sort of alluding to before, I really panicked when the reality of how competitive this industry is set in to me. And I really didn't think that I had what it takes. And there were a couple of things that happened, and the Jimmys was one of them, that did not feel like they were even remotely tangible or remotely possible for me, and they became possible. And the Jimmys, yeah, they're really high profile, and you know, a lot of people since have told me that they're a big deal, which I was like, I wish you would have told me that before. But that doesn't really matter. Like, it could have been anything, but there were just a couple of things that were really just sort of like, you need to give this a shot. You need to give this a go. You can't give up on it just because it's scary. And that was a huge moment for me. And I've never forgotten that feeling of just sort of validation and of just sort of, yeah, like of, you know, go for it. You can do this. But it was insane. I still can't believe it. I still can't believe it. And I don't think I ever will.
So does Young Arts put this on? Is that how that works? Like, mm-mm. If you were a young, okay, what's the relationship of Young Arts to this? And if you were like a young high school student looking to find your way into that possibility, what would you do?
Yeah. So they're completely separate organizations.
Okay.
The Jimmys is, Jimmy Niederlander. That's why it's called the Jimmys. It's from the Niederlander family and organization. And it's an award ceremony and a scholarship program that the winner is awarded a sum of money to go towards their education. And so Young Arts is another program that I did, that was also extremely transformational, maybe even more so. And it's the same deal. It's a scholarship program, but instead of being like it's technically sort of a competition, but instead of being like that, it's like you sort of submit yourself, and if you're chosen, then you're brought to a series of locations. You know, like the first week you're brought to Florida, and you do this like whole thing in Florida, and it's like a workshop. It's like all of these classes and all these things, and then there's a performance at the end, and if they feel like you did a good job in your performance, then there's another week in New York City, and then if they feel like you did a good job in New York City, you're awarded a little bit of money and you're given the opportunity to submit a series of essays actually to the White House to potentially have your name thrown in the hat to be considered to be a presidential scholar in the arts. So this is less of a, it has a competitive nature to it, but it's less of a competition and more of like a scholarship program. And like, it's very like, very educationally based, like, you know, the whole presidential scholars thing and just, it's very intellectually very, very high thought, you know, with the workshops and the teachers that you work with. And yeah, you just submit a tape and hope for the best. And at the time I like was going to the University of Minnesota to be in the BA English program to be an English teacher. I was like, acting is not happening. It's too hard. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go be an English teacher, which I was really excited about. Like I said, came from a family of educators. It sounded perfect for me. And my dad was like, listen, I know that this is what you want to do, and that's fine, but there's this this program that I've heard about called Young Arts, and you might stand to make a little bit of money, so might as well submit. So I did a monologue and a song, and I submitted a tape, and I was like, this isn't going to happen, but who knows. And so I get this phone call, and I'm like, yeah, who is this? And they're like, Young Arts. I'm like, what? They're like, Young Arts? You submitted your tape? I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. Like, what's up? They're like, yeah, do you want to, like, come to Florida and, like, compete to, like, do this amazing... I was like, okay. And so I go there, and it was sort of the same thing. I was like, this is stupid. Why am I even here? Like, I don't belong. And I've said maybe 1,000 times, I walked into Young Arts as an English teacher and walked out as an artist. It was just this inspirational cesspool of talent, and I was surrounded by my peers, all of whom, and not just acting, by the way, because Young Arts honors actors, photographers, visual artists, animators, dancers, like the whole gamut of artistic expression is represented there. And just to be surrounded by, you know, 150, 200 some odd kids who all really wanted it and were all extremely talented, but you know, I mean, obviously, you know, artists, whatever, so some people were pretentious, but hardly any pretension there, and just really, like, incredible, incredible people who just really wanted to express and change the world at such young ages. And I was like, oh, I can choose to be a part of this. I can choose to represent my generation like all of these amazing kids are doing. And so I did. And I just became so involved and so inspired, and that sort of high of like, oh, I can do this. Oh, I'm going to do this. I think is what ended up carrying me through to the end, where I ended up being honored by the United States government as a presidential scholar in the arts. And again, it was another thing of like, okay, come on. Like, I need to do this. I need to do this.
That is some serious affirmation.
Some serious affirmation. And again, coming from a place of like, I didn't expect any of this to happen. As a matter of fact, I basically actively expected it not to. And so when it did, it was just a sign to me. It was just a clear sign to me of like, you're going in the wrong direction. You can fight this all you want to, but this is something you have to do.
No, the universe kept throwing you all kinds of evidence that you're an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you get this amazing series of affirmations really pointing to your path. You finally, at the age of what, still 18, 19,
yeah,
come out to LA?
Mm-hmm.
18?
Mm-hmm.
And you land in Hollywood feeling like, okay, maybe this is really something to go for. So then what happens? Is it like a cakewalk or
nope.
She says,
so,
setting him up.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's never
right,
a cakewalk
right
for anybody.
So the following 2 years were filled with poverty and maybe some questionable choices and loneliness and struggle and a lot of times calling my parents and saying, I'm going to give up, and them saying, don't you dare. And a lot of me going to my manager's office and saying, I'm giving up. And she saying, don't you dare. As a matter of fact, there was at my lowest of low, where I had absolutely no money and I was essentially living out of my car, my manager was like, okay, you're moving in with me. You're moving into my house. I don't care. You're not paying me rent. You're too talented. You're too good to leave. I know that you want this too much to give up. And again, it just goes back to like the amount of support that I have felt from people who really care about me is something that I will never forget and value more than anything on this planet. And meeting Dove was no exception to that. She has gotten me through more hard times than maybe anyone in this world has. And that's what kept me going. But no, I got here and it was hard. And I worked some really crappy jobs, like including but not limited to, you know, being a killer clown at a Halloween event, you know, working from 3 p.m. to 3 a.m. and then waking up at 2 p.m. the next afternoon and doing it all over again and charging after people with an axe.
And, like, you know, granted, I wasn't waiting tables, but, like, that wasn't what I came out here to do, you know? But I was still really grateful for it, because it was money, and I still kind of felt like I was performing. I don't know, like, and my outlook wasn't always positive, you know? I'm definitely not, like, the champion of, like, I never gave up. I tried to give up on this 1,000 times, but there are... like I have said a few times in this interview, there are people in my life who won't let me do it. And that is the difference between me and maybe the next guy, because it's the people who have believed in me, because I am not strong enough to do this alone. And thank God I don't have to.
Let's talk about the Disney Channel for a second.
Sure.
So we met
yes,
when you
we
were
did.
19.
Yes, we did.
And you walked into that audition room. Never forget. So amazing. And you and Delva Beach told the story about, you know, how it wasn't like instantly.
Oh, we hated each other. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so hilarious when you first met. But you did end up with the role of Diggy.
Right.
And working on the channel helped raise your profile considerably.
Mm-hmm.
Anything
mm-hmm.
you want to say about that experience?
Yeah, well, I mean, that you know, sort of fits with what I was saying before. So I had been in that particular casting office, I mean, maybe 40 times. And Suzanne and Sheila, those casting directors, really, really liked me. And I was getting very frustrated with them because they kept telling me how much they liked me, but I wasn't booking anything. And again, making connections that weren't real and getting frustrated about problems that weren't real. But they were always batting for me. Or I guess the better metaphor would be always giving me an opportunity to have an at bat in the first place. And so, you know, just like any audition, just this random thing for something called Liv and Maddie, where some girl named Dove Cameron was already attached, came by my desk. And I was like, okay, great. And I went in and I auditioned for Suzanne and Sheila, and I got a call back because they usually called me back because they were great about that. And I went in and did the, it was like so typical and so conventional, it's not even funny. And I made it past the first couple rounds of casting, and then they wanted to screen test me with Dove. And so I booked that role, and that was a big one for me because, I mean, yeah, Disney Channel is extremely high profile, but, like, you know, it's not like I was the lead or anything. So it was less about that and just more about, like, Diggy was a recurring role. So it was the first time that I felt like there was any sort of stability, because at the time I had really only done two things plus being a killer clown. So, you know, two and a half things, maybe two and a quarter things. And,
guest star roles.
Yes, guest star.
On,
like,
TV shows.
Well, no, not even. So a guest star role on a medical drama on TNT, and then a co-star, a 10-word co-star on The Middle on ABC. And so, you know, not much going on. The guest star helped me pay my rent for a few months. That was awesome. The co-star helped me, you know, have groceries. But not much going on. And then Liv and Maddie came, and yeah, it was, you know, I was called in for 13 episodes the first season, and that was a lot of work for me, which I hadn't experienced. And so I think that was the biggest thing. It was the consistency and the fact that there was a team of producers who wanted to continuously call me in, and that I was a part of a story. Yeah, I mean, and that is sort of where the momentum started, and it's weird. It's sort of like a chicken and the egg thing. It's like, is that what is the fact that happened where the momentum came from, or did I create the momentum myself because suddenly I had this confidence boost? I don't know, but I like to think it's more of the latter, because then I feel more in control of things. But yeah, it was an amazing experience, one that I'll never forget, one that I'm highly grateful for. One story. Just in terms of don't focus on the how, focus on the what. Right, I think I've shared this before, but I don't even... Did I told you this story? I don't know.
I don't know.
Forgive me if I'm repeating myself. Right before... Yeah, you tell me the story and then I'll know, Ryan. Shut up. Right before my audition for Liv and Maddie, I was really close to replacing the guy who played Andre in the Broadway musical Once. So close, in fact, that I had auditioned a few times and we got a call that was like, hey, do you want to come to New York and kind of like test for it, like do a final audition with the producers?
Wow, which would have been amazing.
Well, and so I was sort of like, listen, like, really short on cash, I can't make it to New York. They were like, no, we'll pay for you, we want to see you so bad. And I was like, oh, okay, sure, how many people am I up against? They were like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't think you understand. You are up against no one. This part is essentially yours. We just want to meet you. And so I went out there and I auditioned, and I mean, I kicked the audition's butt, man. Like, I did an amazing job. And it's Once, so, like, not only did I have to sing and act, but they also had me in a room playing bass, playing drums, playing guitar, like, totally jamming with them. I felt so confident. Like, I nailed it. And I flew home, and we never heard from them. And a month later, I booked Liv and Maddie, which never would have happened if I ended up getting Once. And at the time, I knew that Once was the answer, and that that was going to be my big break, and that that's what I needed. And when it didn't happen, I was so devastated, because that was my chance. And again, I was totally ignoring the fact that I don't know how the plan works. And what the actual plan was so much better than that. And I had no idea.
I love that. That is a story.
Yeah. Yeah. Bonnie's so like, that's true. A story. All this other crap you've been saying has sucked. But no, that's a good one.
No, but really, people forget this, man. You know, you lose something you think you want. You don't know why. And it's just like, that's just not our part. Well, that takes me straight into my next question, which is like, what do you think is important and not important for success?
Yeah. I think what's both important and not important is like, well, success can mean so many different things. And I think your definition of success is going to define whether success itself is important or not. Because I think a lot of people think that success sort of wraps itself around the false idols that most of us fall for, which is sort of like popularity, fame, money, you know, image, status. And that's not success. Those things will never make you happy. I have those things. A lot of my friends have those things. They don't make you happy. As a matter of fact, most of the time, they make you miserable. What makes you happy is personal growth, achievement, you know, community service, having meaningful relationships with close friends, having a support system of a family that you love and that loves you. That's what success is. And I think it's really important to define success in a realistic and actual way, instead of falling for a definition of success that the media or that some sort of whatever false supposition of success that you've sort of adapted or believed in or have fallen for, I guess is a better way of putting it. Like, I see so many people who come out to Los Angeles and they're looking for that quick fix, that quick money, that quick fame. Like, it's all going to happen for me. It's all going to blow up for me. And it's like, look, even if it does, like, the faster you rise, the harder your fall. Like, if you're looking for just like a quick fix, and if you think that money and success and fame is going to, you know, solve all your problems, like, you're so wrong. I think the most success that I've had has come from things that have nothing to do with my career. I really like that in my life I have moved from a small town in Minnesota to a giant town in California, and have, like I said, made friends that I really care about. So many phenomenal people that I can now fall back on and can fall back on me. The success that I feel is the success of waking up every morning when I don't have a job and exercising or writing a song or using talents that I've picked up on the side. You know, I like to rock climb now. Like, all of these, you know, I've made a life for myself that is far beyond acting, because acting is hard and it's not reliable. And if you're going to book a part, that's going to happen or it isn't. And that really, like I've said before, it doesn't have anything to do with you. And so you need to be able to be successful when you're quote unquote not successful too. And I think that is the most important thing. Your life has to be more than just, oh, I booked something. Because for the days that you don't book something, if that's the only thing that matters to you, you're going to be really sad and you're going to be really lonely and you're going to be really scared. And that's not a good life to live.
Well, so how do you stay positive when you're like between jobs or when, you know, something comes up that's, you know, feels like a roadblock or, you know, where do you get that?
Dove, my mom, my sister, my friends, you know, I think that there needs to sort of be, you need to find a way to appreciate difficulty. You need to be able to find a way to love that you're struggling, not in a masochistic way, in an appreciative way, in a way where you know that all of the incredible high highs are only going to be worth it if you experience the low lows. And that's way more easier said than done. Way more easier said than done. That isn't just a mindset. That isn't just a you know, nice little Tumblr post or something. That's a lifestyle. That's something you have to commit to when the chips are really down. And if you can, yeah, like I said, the awful times where it's like, wow, I have no money, I have no jobs, I'm super afraid, but I would never be able to feel any of this if I didn't do it, if I wasn't brave enough to even take this step. And I was just having this conversation with my sister on the phone. It's like, no matter how successful or, you know, unsuccessful you are, like, we're all struggling actors because being an actor in and of itself is a struggle. And the choice is yours, whether that struggle is the thing that defeats you or the thing that inspires you, whether that's the biggest evil in your life or the biggest beauty in your life. The choice is yours, and it's a really fine line. And it just depends on it depends on which side you commit to being on that line. And I spent 2 years, my first 2 years out here, feeling so bad for myself and being so depressed. And that isn't worth it. That isn't worth it. And I have struggled just as much while I was happy. And that struggle changed me, taught me things, made me more. And when I had that mindset, I was able to learn those tools and utilize those tools. And by the way, those tools made me a better actor. They made me be able to have access to parts of the human experience that I wouldn't have access to. The struggle is the training, you know? It is all part of it. And you need to recognize that.
I love that. The struggle is the training. Mm-hmm. That is so true. So, do you have any advice for kids who want this life, who want the life that you lead or that they think you lead?
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is, the life that I lead, well, and like, it's, and I'm not like this, like Dove is a much better example of like that, like crazy, like unattainable success story. And I have a lot of friends who have just done so unbelievably well for themselves, who just, you know, all this money and so much fame and whatever. And yeah, like, you think that they lead this amazing, glamorous lifestyle, but I can tell you straight up, like, you know, we sit on the couch and watch cartoons and eat pizza just like everyone. Like, it's not really the only thing that's different about a really famous, super quote unquote successful person and someone who isn't, is that they're probably way more busy and way more stressed out. Like, so, you know, if you want this life, that's great, but But you need to, A, want it for the right reasons, and B, you need to have realistic expectations of what it is. Because, first of all, that crazy, unattainable success story is really hard to get to, and the chances are you probably won't, which is okay, because you do not need to be that to have a successful life. I know so many actors who you actually probably know of, too, but you don't know their names, but you've seen them in everything, and they aren't famous, but they work a lot because they're passionate, and they work hard, and they keep their nose to the ground, and they're just doing it. You need to want to be an actor. You need to want to do the art. You need to want to tell stories. You need to want the struggle. If you want the money, if you want the fame, if you want the glamour, watch reality TV, man, because that's the only place that you're really going to get it. And that's all fake anyway. Like, if you're in it for the wrong reasons, you're going to crash and burn. And There's nothing wrong with admitting to yourself that you might be in it for the wrong reasons, but if you can do that, then you should find something that's actually going to make you happy, because you know, it isn't going to make you happy if you're doing it for those reasons. It's only going to make you happy if it's really about the art for you.
I agree completely. That's brilliant advice. Thank you. So, how can people find you, Ryan?
Well, my address. No, I'm kidding. Here's the laundry list of my social media. On Twitter, I'm just at Ryan McCartan, which is just my name, Ryan McCartan, McCartan. On Instagram, it's a long story, don't ask. Someone already took Ryan McCartan. So my handle is Macaria, McCarya. It was my username in high school. It was picked for me, and I just ran with it. On Facebook, I am the real Ryan McCartan, so don't follow the false one. I'm the real one.
So all of those are verified accounts with a little blue check.
Yes, yes, yes. Look for the blue check.
If you don't see the blue check, you need to keep looking.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then also in this interview, I've mentioned what we've talked about, a few of the organizations that I've been a part of that I really believe in. And if you're of the high school age and you're looking to completely change your life and explore the arts in a way that you maybe never thought possible, I would definitely look for Young Arts. They're just at Young Arts on Twitter. And they're an organization that I totally believe in, and they changed my life, and I bet they could change yours too.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, subscribe to this free podcast and leave a quick rating and review. A moment to click on a star rating really helps, and a minute to write a sentence long review makes a real difference in the ranking for this podcast. Thank you so much for helping me. Do you want to know more about getting a young actor up and running in Hollywood? Buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And if you need specific help getting your career or your child's career up and running or to the next level, you can get a one-on-one consultation with me over Skype or in person in Los Angeles. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the consultations page. Thanks, and see you next week.